You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Hey Earthlings! Welcome back for another episode of Tomorrow's World. I'm Isla Christensen.
And I'm Stella Huggins. As always, think of this as an open letter between you and I and an expert in their scientific field.
As we look at some big ideas of science and society, with a focus on how we will be impacted and how we can influence the world around us on this floating rock that we call home.
This week, we are going to take a dumpster dive into rubbish, waste, litter, whatever you want to call it. This podcast is all about trash talk.
So how exactly did we end up at a point with 1.6 million square kilometres of trash floating around in the Great Garbage Patch? While doing some research on this topic, I've found that landfills were actually started 3000 BC in Knossos, where they simply had a hole in the ground for food waste, which they covered in dirt. And since then, it's been widely accepted that rubbish is a byproduct of life.
And it wasn't until 1842 that the age of sanitation began, when a report was released linking disease to grimy environmental conditions.
This was supported by the Public Health Act of 1848 by the UK government, where English social reformer Edwin Chetwynd, an economic argument that was money spent on improving public health was therefore cost-effective, as it would save money in the long term and helping the poor get out of the conditions they were in. His main considerations to improve the health of the public were improving drainage and sewers, the removal of all refuse from houses, streets and roads, the provision of clean drinking water, and the appointment of a medical officer for each town.
And so this week we are joined by a garbologist, that really is a title for someone who knows a lot about rubbish, Dominic Salmon from 3R. Dominic has over 20 years working with local and regional councils and is a board member for Wastemans.
3R, the Reimaginers, based in Hawke's Bay, the home of product stewardship. They're all about reducing the environmental impact and the product over its lifetime by involving stakeholders at every stage. Using a waste hierarchy as a guiding principle, they apply existing ideas where appropriate to collaborate with new inventions and solutions.
So 3R specialises in the design and development of product stewardship schemes, which is working with industry or companies or agencies that are looking to have a better outcome for their product, and we design from cradle to grave and work with those industries to come up with a more circular solution through the stewardship of those products.
We then went on to ask Dominic his opinion on how we view rubbish, looking at waste management as a measure of development and the privilege that we have to put our rubbish out weekly and for it suddenly to just disappear, out of sight, out of mind. And we also asked if this was simply because it's easy or if there were greater capitalist pressures at play.
Oh, good question. Capitalism pressures. I think they've made it easy. So New Zealand's had a huge reliance on landfills, just due to the fact we've got low population. We've got an abundance of land, and we've always allowed waste disposal to be done at the lowest price to a large degree, and that's changed quite a lot since the 1990s. So with the advent of the waste levy back in 2008, $10 per tonne, that's changing some behaviours, creating some investment funding that can go back to industry and councils, but there's a lot more that we can do. But I think the key point to your question there is we absolutely put something in the bin or the bag, depending on where you live in the country, it goes away. You haven't had to really think about what happens to that waste once it goes away.
We then went on to ask Dominic to provide an insight into an example of product stewardship through 3R. He talked about the Seat Smart program.
That is child seat restraints, where you've had an accident, that seat becomes no longer able to be used, so we take those seats at a cost per unit, we break that material down, to what can be recycled, so the metal gets recycled, the plastic goes to a contractor where it's reground and reprocessed into new materials, the seat straps get washed, and there's a number of really innovative agencies that turn those into bags or into handles for other products. So that's sort of a bit of a hint at what a circular economy model can achieve.
So Isla, you've probably grown up hearing the phrases reduce, reuse and recycle. Well, now there is a new R word floating around.
Sounds a bit naughty.
Don't worry, it's not. It's refuse. We asked Dominic what his thoughts on this were.
You can give me all the R's you like and there's always more that you can add. So, you know, it's about consumer choices. So there's refuse, there's avoid, there's reduce, reuse, recycle, the whole waste hierarchy that is looking at how you can do better with your behaviour and the products that you buy, you consume and dispose of. So absolutely, the consumer choice is key to any product stewardship scheme. You know, you're starting to see the actual awareness of consumers going through the roof due to social media and digitalisation, and people are very aware of brands and what they do. So yeah, it's changed.
Dominic's right. There are a lot of R words for the consumer behaviours with rubbish. So Stella, you've probably heard that money matters, right?
Unfortunately, it does, yes.
It does. And as a student and your decisions day to day, do you think that your consuming habits actually have political power?
I think that we control producers to a certain extent.
You and Dominic are thinking the same thing. He actually thinks it is consumer demand that will drive a circular economy. These consumer choices also extend to policy, where your day-to-day actions do have influence, but let's be real, we need to see some institutional change. I asked Dominic if he thought that policy changes on waste management would result in realised sustainable practices.
I think policy will help the circular economy. It's needed to make some of these product stewardship schemes get to the next level. But certainly consumer demands for these products to have an end-of-life solution is also going to help that conversation. So if you're looking at, you talked about the financial benefits of adopting a circular economy project, you know, you're looking at long-term cost savings or one benefit. There's the benefit of increased local jobs that are likely to come from the circular economy because you're doing it right here, you're not relying on overseas markets. Those two things will also likely fast-track technical innovation and investment, which in turn will look at the reduction of the material that you put in there, i.e. the harmful products, and potentially as you design the product stewardship scheme and the circular economy, you're looking at the impacts on climate change in an increasing manner as well.
I did want to ask as well, maybe on a side note, so doing some research about waste, would you call yourself a garbologist?
A garbologist? No, because I don't like the word garbage. Pure and simple.
Could we? What would it be then? Maybe a product stewardshipist? Maybe, I don't know, we'll have to come up with a
product stewardshipist. Yeah, a refuse wastage warrior. I don't know. I don't know what. I love what I do and I live what I do. So, you know, you can pretty much call me what you want. I used to say to people when I went out into barbecues and they asked me what I do, I'd say I talk rubbish. And it's quite enjoyable. It's quite enjoyable to be stuck at a barbecue being quizzed about what can be recycled, what can be reused.
So, there we have it. Trash talk.
Ooh, and hopefully also reduce talk and refuse talk and circular economy talk.
Oh, absolutely. One can dream. But definitely a sprinkle of hope that systems like the circular economy are in action.
Stay critical, listeners, and take Dominic's advice. Your consumer choices have power. Shop and dispose of wisely.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.